Dave Poulin will join us here in about 5 minutes to look back on heartbreak in Florida last night. Colorado finally got punched in the face, right? St. Louis gave him a punch last night.
Yep.
Let's see how they respond. And night two of the Battle of Alberta tonight. So we'll start looking ahead to that with Poulin. And I referenced a couple of your articles this week, Dave, where you've been tracking this team for a long time, the Leafs, and you know, you wrote a really interesting piece about the quick turnaround and the quick response and Shanahan, Dubas, et cetera, effectively saying we're going to run it back. Now, I'll believe it when I see it. You know, we'll see exactly what that means, what the team actually looks like come opening night. But by all accounts, Shanahan, Dubas, Keefe, and the big guys are more than likely going to return next year for the Leafs. And the checks and balances around that organization. You know, you referenced Tim Leiwicki in your article. What would happen if Tim Leiwicki was still here?
Yeah.
What would the tone be? But there's an outgoing president and CEO. There isn't anyone that's come in yet. I don't know what that means for checks and balances around the Maple Leafs. And I guess that would apply to the Raptors as well.
Yeah, for sure. And I just, you know, you look back on that Tim Leiwicki era, Hayes, and I can tell you this, you know, six straight first round exits does not go over well in the Tim Leiwicki mentality, because the words that still resonate with me talking to that guy when he first arrived, it was amazing, because all the stuff that doofuses like me and guys like you on the radio had been saying was, you know, this franchise doesn't care about anything but profit. Winning isn't the organizational, you know, goal, right? They win when they fill the building. They win when they stack money on top of money on top of money. And Leiwicki was the guy that came in. Hey, he's the first guy, really, that came in here and said, we cannot tolerate losing. Like, we have to set the goal of winning championships, not playoff rounds, championships. And, of course, his great disciple and protege, Masai Ujiri, took that to heart and swung big and won one. And I just haven't seen the same type of mentality on the Leafs side.
No, it was there when Shanahan first got here. You know, there was a real bloodletting among the organization. Like, there was a huge turnover, and there was lip service towards getting it right, quote unquote, which I think they put in motion, and I think they did. You know, they bottomed out the way. Yeah, they turned things over, and in comes Matthews and Marner and Nylander, et cetera, and even Babcock coming here, Lamoriello coming here. It really changed almost on a dime. Like, it took a year or two, but it got there with Shanahan.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that they don't have a very good team. They do have a good team. I think they're a likable team in terms of their personalities, in terms of the way they represent the Shield and the city. You know, they're not a bunch of idiots doing a bunch of dumb things that make you kind of turn your back on the franchise or feel...
No, there's no salute gate.
No, it's none of that kind of stupidity. Like, they've really... I was having this conversation this morning. Like, they really are playoff victories away from, I think, reestablishing original six Toronto Maple Leaf greatness, like what they should look and sound and feel like.
Yeah.
The problem is they can't achieve that. And everything else you can control. You can control your culture. You can control who you draft, who you sign, who you hire, the mandates, the rules, the regulations, the way you police it. What you can't control is when the puck drops, what the other team is going to allow you to do.
Yeah.
Right? Like, once the puck drops, the other team's allowed to try to win too. And for 6 years, if not 18 years, the other teams have said, sorry, you're not going to be able to establish what you really want to establish.
Exactly.
And
yeah, so true.
Ultimately, that's what stings the most. You know, is, yeah, you want to be proud of the group. You want to like the players, the coaches, the way they operate. But you got to win to really complete the mission. And the fact of the matter is, they're not even close to that because they can't get out of the first round.
No, that's just it. Like, we're not talking about a team that's nearly missing, you know, and we've heard that narrative from other teams. Like this Lightning team, before it got through and won a cup, you know, they'd been to a final in 2015, and they'd had the heartbreak of losing in the first round, getting swept in the first round by Columbus. They'd missed the playoffs altogether in there. So, but the point about that is, you know, they hadn't stumbled at the first hurdle every time, like this Maple Leafs team is. Like, you have to go, like, there isn't a team that has stumbled at the first hurdle in winner-take-all games like the Maple Leafs have. 5 straight years, we had that stat, which was incredible, that never in the history of the NHL, NBA, and Major League Baseball has anybody lost 5 straight winner-take-all games in the first round. But to me, it's what Shanahan said at near the end of that press conference that had to be the most alarming thing, Hayes, if I'm in management, upper management, if I'm above Shanahan's pay grade, because he said we're still looking for that killer instinct.
Right.
And that's the same thing they were looking for last year when they got, you know, embarrassed and humiliated by the Montreal Canadiens. And that tells me they don't know where to find it.
Well, and maybe Pooley knows the answer to it. Pooley went to 3 Stanley Cup finals. You know, Pooley had the killer instinct. He played on teams with killer instinct. Here's our TSN hockey analyst, Dave Poulin, joining us here in the Maple Toyota Hotline. I'm sure there's a lot of teams out there that pose that question internally, Pooley. How do you find killer instinct? Like, are you born with it? Can you develop it? Where do you find killer instinct?
Well, here's the teaser, gentlemen. You're going to have to read my column on Sunday.
All right.
Look at you guys with the Toronto Star. Okay.
I have spent I started Wednesday, actually, which is early for me to start a weekend thought process for a column. Mm-hmm. And normally I vet it with the editor on, you know, early Friday. And I went to him Wednesday and I said, I'd like to try and tackle killer instinct because we've been talking about it so much and thinking about it so much. And the way I did it, it's not, I guess it's not finite the way I did it, but I went back and really scanned through my hockey career starting when I was young to try and figure out exactly what you're asking, Brian. Like, why did I have it? And I actually asked a couple of former teammates, like, before I started, right? I got to verify, like, hey guys, I had this, right? Like, I'm not kidding myself, and they laughed.
Right.
They said, yeah, you had it. Yeah, including a guy I slashed numerous times, apparently. He said, yeah, you had it, for sure.
Yeah.
and so I drilled down, and I looked back, and I picked out 6 different people and or places that I feel were significant in adding to my killer instinct. And it went back to a kid I played with when I was really young, and he was a huge contributor to it in a different way. So it's not something that I mean, you can't go to the store and buy it on a shelf. You can't order it on Amazon, and I don't think you can bring one guy into a locker room and say, okay, we have it now. That's not the way it works. And I think it's a combination of, I think a lot of the guys on the team, Brian, have it, mm-hmm, in various, I guess, layers, but it doesn't come out at the right time. And why is that? And maybe it's a circumstance they haven't been on. Some of them have way more than they think they do. Some of them learned it from people that and they haven't applied it yet, and it's there. And some of it may be from watching, you know what, somebody may 2 years from now say, well, I picked that up from Mark Giordano when he was here, you know, at the end of that tail end, if that's all they were here for. So it's not something that is as concrete as he's got a good shot or he's good back checker or he's good penalty killer. But I really believe it's a real thing, guys. I really do. And, you know, I had a long chat with one of my former teammates today about it, and who had it in spades. And, you know, we were talking about other guys on the team. And so then when you brought someone in, they kind of observed what was going on, and they were just assimilated to it. Like, I'll tell you a kid that I think has it, and this may surprise you or it may not. I think Ross Colton has it.
Yeah, it seems that way.
Yeah,
sure does.
Okay, so let's look at his background. He's from, you know, a town in New Jersey. He played in the USHL for 2 years with Cedar Rapids. He played at Vermont for Kevin Snedden for 2 years. He played 2 years in Syracuse. And then you could see it coming last year. You know, part of it is an experience. Well, he scored the winning goal in the Stanley Cup game, you know? And now he's got 5 goals. He scores big goals. He scores them at big times. He expects to score them. And just when you see him score a goal, you're like, damn, where did that come from? And so you come into a team with Stammer and Kucherov has it in spades.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, he just loves to put that dagger in. And his laissez-faire attitude, you know, when he's passing the puck and you're like, because he can look so casual, it would drive a coach crazy.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's kind of a casual killer instinct. Like, he's smiling when he's doing it. And so it's a fascinating point. It's an intangible in sport that is enormous. And I believe a lot of guys on the Leafs have it. It doesn't come up at the right time.
Yeah. Well, Dave, I guess that's the question, right? You look at, Hayes and I were talking about, you look at the Lightning stats, especially at 5-on-5, and it's, you know, as much as, Kucherov's the heart of that team and points hurt right now, but so many of these guys that are, you'd consider depth pieces, like the Ross Coltons of the world and Nick Paul, who burned the Leafs in the biggest moment of their season. And on down that list to Corey Perry, who, you know, is a depth piece that was available on the free agent market to anybody. My question to you is, David, do these guys become central figures in the Stanley Cup playoffs because they're on the Lightning, or could they become that for anybody? Could they have become that for the Toronto Maple Leafs? Is it the core that creates those guys, or is it those guys who add to the core?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's literally the chicken and the egg, but I think the core is what gives them the confidence and the ability and the environment and the place setting to do it. Because let's face it, Nick Paul goes in and he is on the fourth line, and then Braden Point gets hurt and he gets elevated, but he answers. And, you know, Nick Paul answered at the World Championships last year, and he's coming from an Ottawa team that didn't win many hockey games. And in some ways he struggled to find a place there. But you know, you look at that team and this is something that is interesting with the Leafs because of the way they're built, they don't get long-term residents in the second tier category because they either right price themselves or they just replace them.
Right.
And so they don't get Alex Killorn, who's been there since 2007. He draft pick in 2007. And then when you start in 2008, every single year there's at least one or two additions. Other than the draft, they missed on Drouin, but they brought Sergachev in from the same draft in the trade. Mm-hmm. And every year you're adding. So those components have been together so long. Like, Andre Palat has been forever there. Just forever.
Yeah.
But he's been with Killorn. And so they get put in these situations, and they're so comfortable in them. And, you know, and then when they go out and pick up a guy, they pick up the captain of the New York Rangers. Not just a New York Ranger, but the captain of the New York Rangers. In Ryan McDonagh, and you know, and now he's been there 5 or maybe 6 years, and so I think it's that long-term build of the support group that really contributes to that, Dave. That the environment that says when you come in here, you know, we've been together a long time, and here's what we do. And yeah, we went through some tough times, but we figured it out. And in those tough times, they won playoff rounds, and you know, they went deep in the playoffs. They just didn't win the cup.
Right.
So, I think it's a combination of that long-term base and the fact, you know, they've got, on a normal night, they've got, 11 draft picks in their lineup. And they just have that little pipeline going. And they're not all-star draft picks. Some of them are lower down, like a Ross Colton. But when he comes in, he grows with it, and he gets it. And they don't even own their American League team. That's an independently owned team. Howard Dolgan owns that team in Syracuse. So, you know, they figured out a way to do it and do it in a very effective manner.
Yeah, they sure have. We're Dave Pullen, our TSN hockey analyst. So we've got game two of the Battle of Alberta tonight. I just saw Haley Salvian tweet out sarcastically, just under 6 hours until puck drop in Calgary. Because even out there, they're complaining, and it's going to be about 8:40 local time. It's 10:40 Eastern time. And, like, this is, you know, you got two games going in the Stanley Cup playoffs tonight, and I understand there's an NBA game, and I think that's the issue, is that ESPN and TNT, they own the rights to both. I'll guarantee you, if it was NBC that still had the rights, this game would start at a different time tonight. But you got the Battle of Alberta. You've got Connor McDavid, the face of your league, starting a playoff game at 10:40 Eastern time. Like, how can the league possibly explain this?
Yeah, well, they can't, and they shouldn't have to explain it, because it shouldn't happen. It just
right.
shouldn't. There's only two games tonight. You know, even if you played it off and said, okay, you know, I mean, you've got to adjust them and move them, you do. And I will say that, you know, this is an age-old argument, and I can share with you that I played 9:30 starts my first, I believe, 2 years in the NHL on the road in Madison Square Garden because the circus was on in the matinee.
Wow.
9:30 starts on right. ice where you had a circus in the afternoon.
That's crazy.
And it was ridiculous. It was ridiculous. And you'd say, well, that's not that big a deal for the players. It is a big deal for the players. And an 8:50 start is, it's too late. It just is. It's out of the routine. It's out of everything. And you're right. I still think it's going to be a great series. It's going to be a fully entertaining series. However it plays out, we could get a 1-0 game tonight. But it should be, you know, I mean, if anything, on a holiday Friday, started earlier, Brian.
No kidding.
You know, you'd have a 4 o'clock crowd today, wouldn't you, in the bar?
Yeah, you would. You're right. It's absolutely a holiday. And if it's the Battle of Alberta, it's a holiday anyway. You know, no one's going to work.
Absolutely.
You can start that game at any point, for sure. No, it's no so question. Disappointing. It is disappointing. And do you expect – I'm not sure what to expect out of either team tonight, considering what Game 1 was. But I guess it's necessary. The Oilers have a response. Clearly, they have to clean up their defensive play. Mike Smith has to be a lot better. But – What are the Oilers thinking here tonight? How do we analyze Game 1 and apply some sort of logic from that into what we can expect out of them in Game 2?
Well, they need more from their depth. I mean, Connor McDavid was tremendous in Game 1, but they need more, and they need more physical play, guys. And, you know, I mean, Zach Cassian can't surface at the end of the game, and he just can't. Connor McDavid can't lead the team in hits. You know, as majestic as that is and how cool it is, he can't. He just can't. And so they've got to go further down. Now, Hyman had a couple of goals for them, but he's a top-line player. They have to get, I think, more physical play, and they have to get on this Calgary defense. And the Calgary defense, I think, is vulnerable, but you've got to get to them fast. And it's interesting when you get a pair of guys like Zadorov and Gudbranson. And Gudbranson is just – and he looks great out there. And that's your third pairing, and they're big and they're physical, but you've got to get on them, and you've got to make them play in their end. And I think that's the biggest thing. But what we're seeing out of Calgary doesn't surprise me. I think they're one of the top 4 or 5 built teams in terms of the way they're constructed from top to bottom. And, you know, Darryl isn't even that worried about matching up with McDavid. Now, I say that respectfully. The way he's worried about it is you better know when he's on the ice, guys. But he trusts his 4 centermen. And in his 4 centermen, I mean, Michael Backlund's a good defensive center, but so is Kale Järnkrok. And so is Trevor Lewis, you know, with his couple of Stanley Cups. And so he doesn't feel the need to play his Selke Trophy candidate, Elias Lindholm. And well, then what that automatically does, guys, is when you're not out there with McDavid, think of the freedom you feel. Like, yeah. You know, you're Michael Backlund out there with Coleman and Mangiapane, and you're going, this is great. We don't have McDavid this shift. And when you do get him, you take full responsibility, and you don't stop him, but you maybe slow him down a little bit. But I was looking for matchups early. I don't think we're going to see them just because of the way Calgary's built.
Well, Dave, getting back to the Leafs, and you've obviously been on the Leafs executive team in your career, so you know a little bit about the inner workings of the corporate monstrosity that is Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment. But, you know, we were just talking, Hayes and I, about – you know, the dynamics of that organization right now. And basically, Brendan Shanahan's had 8 years to run this hockey operation, essentially left on his own. Very little oversight, very little questioning from my understanding, because he had a CEO who really wasn't a sports guy after Tim Lawicki left in 2015. And in ownership, as you know, there is a three-headed animal, you know, with various interests, none of which seem to be to nitpick the hockey team. But at what point, Dave, do you think, you know, this organization could use maybe a little bit of an injection of that Lawicki kind of, we cannot tolerate losing again and again and again. We can't just leave this hockey department on its own. Someone's got to say something here. How do you see it, Dave?
Well, it's interesting, because what Brendan Shanahan did is quieted all the outside talk immediately.
Yeah,
we don't know what the dialogue is inside, Dave. In fairness, I mean, he might have walked out of that and went right to Kyle Dubas and said, this isn't good enough. This is flat out not good enough.
Yeah.
And that very well could be the case. And if that's the case and that's happening behind doors, and I fully expect it would be, I really do, Brendan Shanahan has to know they have to get better. It's not, you don't come back the next year and have everybody just be better. It's not the way it works. And I know they had 8 or 9 guys have career years. Well, you don't have career year every year.
Yeah.
And so you would expect some regression there.
Don't stay healthy every year.
you don't stay healthy every year. And the biggest thing is they can't walk this team back next year, not even close, because they're going to lose a number of components to the salary cap. It's just pure numbers. It's not anything. But, I mean, right away, Morgan Riley costs you $2.5 million more, you know, without saying another word. And yeah. So, you know, now you're going to, and your goal is going to cost you, your starting goal is going to cost you more than $1.65 million next year. How's that?
No
whatever
doubt.
That number is. And so immediately you're looking at what you can bring back, and their pro scouting staff has really done an unbelievable job, I think, of adding pieces. You know, from a couple of teams, you know, you look at David Camp in Chicago. That was a great pickup. He had one goal last year, guys.
Yeah.
And Ilya Labushkin, like, you're scouting a really bad team in Arizona, and you're figuring out that one of their D can really help a really good team. That's a real credit to the pro scouts. And they've done a good job with that. But once again, now we're talking about changing out a number of guys each year again. But I think that the statement that was made to the media about we are status quo, we believe in this group, is not the exact same conversation that's gone on behind closed doors, Dave. I just don't. I can't imagine that it is, because they know, you know, the other factor is you're going to have to factor in the next couple of years, and Detroit's going to be better. Buffalo's going to be better. Ottawa's going to be better. And that's just the cycle they're in that ensures that. That's not just that they're bringing the same teams back next year, but they're in growth curves, and they're going to press. And I think the East is going to get, you know, this division is going to get more challenging. I think Montreal will be better than they were. They're not going to be as bad as they were last year. But all of a sudden now you've got more competition within. And I do think that they will make some changes this summer that we don't expect right now. I really do. I think there'll be some significant change.
Yeah. And, you know, we didn't get to it yesterday. We're doing so many different things, but we referenced Cam Neely's end-of-season presser, and that was a very different tone from Brendan Shanahan's end-of-season presser. Meanwhile, the way they played the game was very similar, and I think they both can run hot, and you know Cam Neely as well as anyone, Dave, but he was very blunt in not necessarily saying, hey, like, flying off the handle. It was, we need to get to the inside of the ice better. We need better depth. We need to, like, there were a lot of different things where basically his tone was, I'm not satisfied with losing in seven. You know, like, we're Boston. That's not how we roll. And we are going to attack the problems. And it really, when you juxtaposed with what Shanahan and company had to say, it was very different, Pooley. Very different approach.
Very different. Now, that's my old landlord you're talking about.
Yes, that's right.
I lived with him when I was in Boston. Very straightforward, very blunt. And Brian, I'm not sure that these same exact questions weren't asked by Brendan Shanahan behind closed doors or the same statements made. They would have to be, because they didn't win around. Right. And I'm sure they were. But Cam chose to do it in an incredibly public forum with a coach who has done a very good job. And, you know, I think Bruce Cassidy's done a really good job coaching that team with what they went through this year, you know, and they lost some key pieces. And over the last couple of years, they've lost some key pieces. And the compete level of the president was very evident there. And I'm sure it's the same way here, but I think one said it, you know, out in the open, and my guess is one said it behind closed doors. But now you ask those questions to each other on your best of days. You know, when you talk about in the C-suite, Dave, you constantly ask each other those questions, and it's constantly, I mean, you want people around you that challenge you and, you know, and ask you those questions. That's what you do. That's why they're there. And so they're asking each other those questions. They're just not doing it at the dais, you know, on team exit day.
Yep, and ultimately what you say on days like that in front of a microphone don't necessarily matter that much. You know, what's going to really matter is how you build your team and what you do during the off season. So we'll see. We got a couple of games tonight, a late one tonight, Pooley, but we're all going to be up watching. It's going to be fun. You guys will have coverage, of course, tonight on SportsCenter, so enjoy that, and we'll do it again soon. Happy long weekend. Thank you, Pooley.
Thanks, guys. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the hockey.
You got it. You too. There's Dave Pullen, our TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Build your next dream Toyota at Maple Toyota and check out Maple Toyota's pre-owned inventory arriving daily. It's Red Tag Days. Visit MapleToyota.com. So Noodles has been adamant all week something significant will happen with the Leafs. Pooley basically said he thinks things are going to happen. We'll find out, I guess.
Hey, I'll tell you what. You know, to me, if they want to keep the president, the GM, and the coach employed, they're going to have to do something significant because you can't go in, like, they're going to have to go in front of the board here. Shanahan's going to have to go in front of Larry Tannenbaum and the representatives of the other ownership, and they're going to have to outline a plan here. Mm-hmm. And if it's everybody's keeping the job and we're keeping it all the same and we're running it back, you know they're going to get laughed out of that room, even though I think sometimes that room isn't particularly forceful in the way it deals with the hockey operation.
Right. I don't think it's nasty, but...
You can't. That can't be your plan.
No, it can't, there's no way it can't be the plan. And ultimately, you know, what ends up happening here, the reaction of doing a show like this, a live show, is you know, we get a lot of feedback, a lot of interaction with fans of the shows. And when I sit there and say I think something has to happen, a significant move, I'll get a reaction, well, what do you think, they're going to blow it up and restart? No one's suggesting
no.
that. Like, no,
no
one's saying that you... you know, you take a step back, you know, to take two steps forward. It's the train is moving. It's making an adjustment to one of the buses on the train. You know what I mean? Like, it's not, doesn't mean that you're still not a very good team. And the core of it is Matthews, Marner. They're not going anywhere, nor should they. And you're going to have a very good team. You've got a bunch of guys coming back who are going to be the makings of a good team. But this ingredient, or all of these ingredients thrown into this pot, have led to the same result every single year. So, you know, suggesting that you need to change something, that isn't drastic.
It's not.
That isn't bombastic, oh, crazy hot take guy in Toronto. Like, that's just reasonable following sports of any league, any team. You know? And we'll see. You know, we'll see what comes of it. And in reality, they can't really do anything for another 6 weeks or so anyway, you know, as the Stanley Cup playoffs continue. So...